Tonight, if you will, take your blue ESV out of the pew there, turn to page 282. And we started the book of Ruth last week, and many of you have commented on how meaningful it was to, as we studied the first six or seven verses, and we looked at Ruth and her lineage in the line of Christ, and were it not for Ruth and for the content that we have recorded in the context of Scripture, the wise men could have just kept watch over their flocks by night and not even gone to Bethlehem, and the Christ of Christmas wouldn't have been born there in Bethlehem had it not been for being in the lineage of Ruth. And Ruth goes from Bethlehem, which we looked at last week, which means house of bread, living in the land of Judah. Judah means praise, and we looked at those things last Wednesday evening. But tonight, let's just start with verse 1 and pick up to where we are for tonight in about 7. In the days when the judges ruled. Now, you'll remember that last week I alluded to the fact that these were the days when there was no king in Israel. These were the days that God raised up judges to judge his people. And it was during these days that every man did that which was right in his own sight. So in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. This was a famine of food. There was a famine in the land. Now, Ruth, her husband Elimelech, their two sons are going to leave their land, and they are going to be prodigals. They're going to be strangers. They're going to be aliens. They're going to be foreigners down in a land that they're going to call Moab, for there is food. Now, oftentimes, I think I mentioned the fact that some 13 times we read about famines in the Bible, and those were God's judgment, generally speaking, because of the disobedience of God's people. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. May I say tonight, there's a great famine, I believe, spiritually speaking, in America this evening. I think there is a huge famine, spiritually speaking, when people are drifting away from faith, when people are walking away from faith, when church attendance is declining all over America. And of course, if you go back and read history, you'll see that happened in the nation, the European continent over there, how at one time those cathedrals were filled with people. But today, many of those things have just become places of sightseeing as much as anything. So in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem, Bethlehem means house of bread. It's interesting that they're moving away from the house of bread because there's a famine, a shortage of food. Obviously, God has brought some judgment there because of the waywardness of people, just as in our time today, we see the waywardness of mankind. And a man of Bethlehem in Judah, Judah means praise, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. Verse number 2 tells us the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. And they were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. Verse number 3 says, but Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. Now, I want you to think with me in verse 3 for just a minute. In verse number 3, the loss of anything in life, the loss of anything in life is a huge grief to people. I want you to think with me tonight. So oftentimes we fail to realize that when someone loses a limb, when someone loses a foot, when someone loses an arm, many have lost arms in accidents and with industrial situations where there have been accidents. When someone, a woman, loses a part of herself because of cancer, all of these things are grief issues. And sometimes we fail to remember whatever the loss is, whether it's a loss of relationship, a loss of friendship, a loss of a physical part of our bodies, those are great losses. Whenever you see the wounded warriors on television and you see how maimed some of them are because they fought so that you and I might sit here tonight in freedom. And recently, you know, Veterans Day was upon us again. And we're always reminded of all of these things that happen in people's lives. And so oftentimes we fail to realize the incredible grief and the trauma that's associated with all of these various things that go on when people lose their eye, their vision, their eyesight. All of these things, when people lose their mind, so to speak. I heard just this past week how that Alzheimer's and dementia is just huge and increasing exponentially across the world. And after the COVID situation, how much it had fogged the memories and the minds of people, and that people are struggling with their memories and their mind. Let me say this in experiencing verse number 3 here, even though it's talking about a situation of grief, death, and dying there. But I can't impress upon our minds the importance of staying mentally as alert as you possibly can by reading, by keeping up with things. So many people become so sedentary that they do that as well with their minds. And let me tell you, when we do that, it is easy for a part of our brain cells to die whenever we are not trying to keep those things going all the time, whether it's puzzle work that you do or whatever you do, games that you play or whatever, books that you read, articles that you read, newspapers, periodicals, whatever it may be, I think it's hugely important to keep the mind active and to keep the mind alert. People tell me every single day of the world, I just can't remember. I just can't remember. And so I would encourage you to stay as current as you possibly can. Well, here's a family, a couple. They're leaving their land because of this famine of food. When I think about the famines tonight in third world countries, in the remotest parts of jungles and places in the world where there is not enough food. And I don't know about you, but that burdens my heart, that grieves my heart. Elimelech, Naomi, these two boys, they head out of Bethlehem, Judea. They're going to a foreign place because there's food there. When they get there, after some period of time, there's a death. Now, it's one thing if you're in your own homeland when you lose somebody. But let me tell you, if you're in a foreign land, if you've been in foreign places where people have gone on trips to the Holy Land and died over there, or gone on cruises, or gone to many places in the world and suddenly something happens and they die, can you only imagine being in those situations to have to deal with all of that, not only to mention the incredible emotions of your grief, Naomi and these two sons are there in a strange land, a foreign land. And now there's been this incredible trauma, this experience of grief and death. Verse number 4 tells us, these took Moabite wives, these two sons. So they're there. They're not taking wives from their own land. So they're going to take in these wives here that are of a foreign land, a foreign ways. The Moabites were big into idolatry. And even though they were akin to the Israelites and the Moabites had their own issues with each other. So these took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. They lived there. Notice this family, this mother and her two sons. Notice, and the husband for whatever duration of time he was there. They lived there about 10 years. Verse number 5 tells us, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her sons and her husband. Right there in verse 5, you and I, unless you've been in a situation similar, cannot even begin to comprehend the incredible pain and suffering and grief and loss that this happened in a strange foreign land, even though they've been there some 10 years. She's lost her husband. She's lost her only two sons. The two sons and their wives have no children of their own, so she doesn't have grandchildren. And if you can only imagine that Naomi is incredibly alone, alone to deal with the incredible passing of three family members, you can only imagine the overwhelming sense that crushed her very spirit within her. Notice in verse number 6, then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab. So now she's going back home. It's been 10 years. Obviously, people change in 10 years' time. Have you pulled up any of your glamour shots from 10 years ago? Must I go any further? Then she rose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard, notice news had spread, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. Okay, she's in Moab, but she's heard news from Bethlehem of Judea that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. Verse number 7. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. Verse 8 tells us, but Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, she stops, get the picture. They're on the road, however far that was in their travels. She stops. Naomi realizes that these two girls now would be leaving their own homeland to go to a foreign land that they were not accustomed to a people who served the one true and living God. And Naomi, all of a sudden, she processes the situation. And she says to these two girls, go, return each of you to her mother's house. I want you to see something here that I think is so often overlooked when we read scripture. Is that right here? Can you only imagine? Put yourself in Naomi's place. Of course, she was thrilled to have the company of these two daughters-in-law to go with her. But I want you to see the unselfishness of a mother-in-law who realized that what was probably best for those two daughters-in-law would be to return to their mother's house, to their own homeland. I want you to notice her incredible unselfishness. And notice the blessing that she pronounces upon them in verse number 8. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. Notice her thanksgiving. Notice her gratefulness. Notice she's so appreciative of the faithfulness of two daughters-in-law who deeply and dearly loved her. They had endeared themselves to her, and she's so grateful for that, but because she's such an unselfish individual. In the world that you and I live in tonight, there's the great word that comes to mind, selfishness. Selfishness. Let me ask each of us a question tonight. Are we a selfish individual? Are we a selfish people? Are we a selfish church? Let me tell you, right here in the midst of grief, suffering, loss, pain, heartache, depression, Naomi gives us a glimpse into what it's like to think about somebody else. Others. The old hymn, 77, Broadman, others, Lord, yes, others, let this my motto be. Help me live for others that I might live like thee. Her unselfishness here. Notice she pronounces a blessing. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead. In other words, the kindness you've shown to my two sons. Remember, we looked at them last time and we said they were sickly boys. If you will remember that, that's what their names stood for. As you've dealt with the dead, and notice she doesn't leave herself out. She says, and with me. Verse number 9, the Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. Notice the incredible blessing that she pronounces upon them. The Lord grant that you may find rest. I mean, after all, think about it. These two widows, they're grieving the loss of their husband. So all three of these women can identify with the other in the fact that each one of them has lost their husband, a spouse. And so you can only imagine the incredible pain, the loss. But Naomi has not only lost her spouse, she's lost her two sons. She's lost basically what would be her future. How many people tell me in the loss of children, I've lost my future. I've lost that which I was believing would be there someday for me when I need that. If you can only imagine, she's lost her husband, she's lost two sons, they've each lost a husband. They have not had children for whatever reason. We're not told this in the narrative of the context of the scripture. But notice in verse number 9, then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. Notice that. Do you get the picture? Do you see the scene? Do you see the incredible pain? Do you see the losses they're dealing with? Verse number 10. And they said to Naomi, no, we will return with you to your people. Now, right here in that verse, one of the things that stands out very prominent to me is the fact that they love their mother-in-law so much. And they realize the incredible grief and pain and loss that she's experiencing, and they're willing to leave their homeland in order to be with her, to help sustain her, to help comfort her, to be a great strength to her in her time of loss. But I want you to know, once again, the unselfishness of Naomi in verse number 11 as she responds, "But Naomi said, 'Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands?'" Notice she's saying to them, you need to just go back to your land and to your mother's homes, because she's saying basically there, I'm too old to give birth again. And even if I could, you could not wait all those years until those kids would grow up to remarry. Now, I'm reading between the lines here. I'm reading why she's making this statement that she's making. Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? In other words, she's saying to them, that just isn't going to happen. Verse number 12. She says, once again, turn back, my daughters, go your way, for I'm too old to have a husband. Well, I don't know how old she was, but in my 43 plus, almost 44 years of ministry, I've seen lots of senior adults I thought were too old. But obviously, they didn't think they were too old. And I was worried because I thought this could be deadly. Notice she said, go your way, for I'm too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, there you go. There's what I was saying a few moments ago in verse 13. She goes on and says, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying the rest of that? She goes on and she responds, no, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Let's stop there for a minute. I want you to look at that. For it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Do you remember a book in the Bible called Job? Do you remember in chapters 1 and chapters 2 on a certain day, at a certain time, his 10 children, they're having a great party, a great time. And on that day, all 10 of his kids were taken in a tragic, tragic tornado situation. If you'll remember, he makes the statement, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. I want to talk about grief here for just a minute, because it has been my experience with grief, sickness, death, dying, hospice, all of those kinds of things. Counseling, people who've lost loved ones. It's been my experience that death has two levelers in life. One of the levelers is you will be better or you will be bitter. Bitterness or betterness, and it's a choice. It's a choice you have to make. I was talking with a lady just this week whose husband is going to be buried on Saturday in Texas. And she said to me, she said, Randy, I've told my two sons, go home to your families tonight. I have to spend the nights by myself, and I might as well start tonight. There's a lot of you out there tonight that are experiencing that same thing. Obviously, in this particular verse, it's interesting that she once again, she tries to get them to choose to go back. But she says, for it is exceedingly, that adverb there tells us how bitter, exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Folks, let me tell you, you and I will never, ever understand on this side of eternity the gravity of what all of that encompasses and what all of that means. When Job said, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. Some people approach death and they're angry and they're mad and they're bitter. Let me tell you who they are angry and bitter at. Generally speaking, their spouse that died, he's left me, and I'm left here to figure this all out and to pick up the broken pieces and to somehow make sense out of nonsense. I mean, isn't that the physical way we look at life? To try to make sense out of what is nonsense to us, physically speaking and existing in a world that is filled with death and dying every day. Remember today from 12 o'clock last evening until 12 o'clock tonight, 150 plus thousand people will die. There will be many survivors, and that's every single day of every single year worldwide. Last evening on television, there was a doctor speaking about that every 7 seconds worldwide, people lose their mental faculties, dementia, Alzheimer's, every 7 seconds. The poet said, life is real, life is earnest, but the grave is not the goal. Dust thou art, the dust was not spoken by the soul. How true that is. Notice here Naomi is obviously fighting against her internal self of feeling bitter, feeling angry. And people generally, they get angry at God. Why God? Well, because God is omnipotent. God is all-powerful. So God, you could have changed my situation, but you didn't do it. So people generally get mad at God. It's a human response. It's a human reaction. It's a normal thing that people do that. I've heard other people that seem to be much more spiritual than all the rest of us who oftentimes scold people for being angry and bitter. Let me tell you, if you want to make them even more bitter and more angry, scold them and tell them not to feel that way. That I wouldn't advise you to tell them, don't be angry at God. They're going to feel what they feel. And obviously, in verse 13, Naomi looks at those two daughters. They're experiencing grief too. For it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. I mean, what on earth could Naomi have thought? Lord, you took my husband. Wait a minute. Lord, we were back down there in the place called Bethlehem, meaning house of bread. Judah prays, and the famine falls on your people, we have to leave our homeland. We go to a foreign homeland. And while we're there, I lose my husband. I lose my two sons. I have no way of ever having children again. I have no grandchildren. I've got these two daughters-in-law, but they need to go back to their places. Can you see why Naomi felt bitter? I mean, after all, if we are honest, we would possibly feel that way. I'll never forget Grace Pruitt. When I was minister of music and senior adults at Emmanuel Baptist Church, Grace and Bill Pruitt, that's Brother Dan Pruitt's brother and his wife. Grace and Bill lost all four of their sons. And I can remember, even though they had grandchildren and daughters-in-law, they lost all four of their sons. I think one was 39, one was 41, 42, somewhere. But they were all in that age group of years. And I said to Grace one day, I said, Grace, how have you lived by losing all four of your sons? I'll remember her name is Grace. And she looked at me and she said, Randy, what else could I do? What else could I do but go forward? To look backward and to stay there, you'll get stuck. You'll get caught in grief and you'll never move forward. And I can assure you, many people tonight are stuck and they can't move forward. No doubt Naomi is a person of strength, a person of stamina, a person of courage, and yet at the same time, she's human enough to feel bitter and to feel like that God's hand is against her in this situation. Notice, if you will, in verse number 14, then they lifted up their voices and wept again. Now, I don't know that I think this is a great statement, but in one of the commentaries that I read on the book of Ruth, this particular writer called this particular moment the meeting of the sobbing sisters. I don't know that I would term it that way, but they lifted up their voices and wept again. And notice what happens to the daughters-in-law. And Orpah kissed Naomi, her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to Naomi. Verse number 15. And she said, get the picture, Orpah is kissing Naomi and she's gonna turn back. She's going back home. She's going back to the land she knows, to the gods they worshiped. And she's going back where she knows her people. But Ruth clings to Naomi. And notice what Naomi said to Ruth. She says, see, your sister-in-law's gone back to her people and to her gods, plural. Moab was a land filled with idolatry. They worshiped all kinds of gods. Now notice what Naomi says to Ruth. It's interesting when I read that, if you'll go back to verse 15. It's really interesting there because if you put yourself in the shoes of Naomi, I would have probably said, Ruth, come on and go with me because I serve the one true and living God. Even though I feel like he has brought all of this upon me, but perhaps in her bitterness, I don't know. I'm just suppositioning here. Perhaps in her anger, perhaps in her bitterness, perhaps in her incredibly deep grief emotionally. Maybe she thinks you might as well go back and be with those people and worship those things because the Lord has been against me. I mean, I don't know if that's what she thought, but I certainly could see where she could think that. See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods, returned after your sister-in-law. Twice, Naomi gives these two daughters-in-law an opportunity, a blessing, and a charge. Go back home. Notice in verse number 16, "But Ruth said, 'Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you.'" And I want you to see this incredible declaration of a girl who had been raised up where there was idol, godlessness, and worship in a land filled with idolatry. Ruth says to her mother-in-law, to Naomi, "For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." Four things she says to her mother-in-law. She says, "Do not urge me to leave you." This particular verse is used in many wedding ceremonies, by the way. "Do not urge me to leave you or return from following you." She says, "For where you go," Ruth is saying, "Naomi, you're going back to Bethlehem, to Judea. Wherever you go, I'm going with you. And where you lodge, whatever becomes your lodging place, your place called home, where you rest, reside, sleep, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge." Thirdly, she says, "Your people." Who are those people? They are the Hebrew people. "Your people shall be my people." In other words, Ruth is saying, "I'm forsaking all back there to go with you and to be a part of your family and a part of your worship and to be a part of the God you serve." For she says, "And your God, my God." The interesting thing is, one goes back. We're never told anything else about Orpah's life, but I'm assuming, based upon knowing where she went to the land of her gods, I'm confident of the fact that she probably lived the rest of her life in a land of idolatry, worshiping other gods. But Ruth, on the other hand, Ruth, the one who would be in the line of King David, and who Jesus Christ would come through that line, and someday will come back to rule and reign from Jerusalem, sitting on the throne of David. It's amazing. A little book of four chapters, a midget of a book, but mighty in message. This book is incredible. For Ruth winds up in Matthew chapter 1, her name, in the genealogy of the Christ of Christmas. Notice what she says. Notice the unselfishness on Ruth's part. Little did Ruth know that she would be used greatly and mightily in the lineage of the Christ of Christmas. Little did Esther know, a little Jewish girl who would marry a Gentile king to become the queen of a great nation. Little did she know she would be used mightily of God. A nobody in a land of everybody's, to become the somebody that would deliver the Jewish people. Ruth makes an incredible declaration of faith right there in that verse. And not only does she make a declaration of her love and her faith and that she will be everything to Naomi that Naomi needs to be. Can you only imagine if you had been Naomi and you were standing there and Ruth is saying to you, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, Naomi, I'm going. Where you lodge, Naomi, I'm going to lodge. Naomi, your people are going to be my people. Naomi, your God is going to be my God." Can you only imagine the encouragement that propped up a grieving soul at this particular moment, in this particular juncture, on the road back to a place called home? Verse number 17 tells us, she goes on and she says, "Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried." A lady I was talking with on the phone yesterday said to me, "You know, we had lots to be buried in such and such a town where we grew up. But we've been here for 50 years, and if I want to go to the cemetery and talk to my loved one, then I don't have to drive where we once lived." And so she said, "I've chosen that we're going to be buried here." Ruth says to Naomi, "Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried." Folks, let me tell you, there's not a lot of people in life that feel that way. They'd rather be around where their people are, where their surroundings are. And then notice what Ruth says to Naomi, "May the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts me from you." In other words, Ruth is saying, "Naomi, I'm with you for the long haul. Naomi, I'm with you till the very bitter end." Can you only imagine how encouraged, how strengthened she must have been to realize that one of these girls loved her that much to say, "I'm willing to go." What's interesting to me that I get a picture of is that one turns back to the old sinful life of living in the land of idolatry. But one says, "I'm going to follow Jesus. I'm going to follow your God. Whoever is your God will be my God. Your people will be my people. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Where you go, I will go. And may the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts me from you." I can only imagine the spring in the step of a grieving mother, a grieving widow, when a daughter-in-law says, "I love you this much to forsake all of my past, all of my family, to be a part of your life from here till death parts us." Verse 18, "And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more." I have no doubt that that must have pleased Naomi greatly to realize that she was leaving a foreign land where a husband was buried and two sons were buried, and she's going back home. You talk about a place when she got back home. Talk about a lost feeling. Have you gone back home? Have you gone back home where the love that you had was suddenly gone? Verse number 19 tells us, "So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem." What does Bethlehem mean? House of bread. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. Don't you imagine in 10 years, some probably recognized Naomi. Some probably didn't know. I mean, you know, here's some aliens coming through. 10 years is a long time, and people look different sometimes. The whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, obviously some of them said, is this Naomi? Verse number 20. She said to them, notice what Naomi says, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt, notice this, very bitterly with me. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. Oftentimes I will say to you, when someone has passed, and you go to their house or you see them, hug them and hush. The reason being, right here is a great example in the story of Ruth. She talked about how exceedingly bitter. And notice, she says the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. How many times in grief counseling have I sat and somebody said to me, why does God hate me? What did I do? What caused the death of my spouse? Pastor, tell me, what did I do that God has dealt bitterly with me? And so, rather than making a person feel more bitter and more deeply wounded, the best thing any of us can say is, oh, I know just how you feel. No, you don't. You know how you feel. You know how you felt when you lost your mother, your father, your sister, your brother, your child. But you don't know how that person felt. Why would I say that? Because relationships are different with different people. Some people have children they've been estranged from for years and years and years. People have relationships they've been estranged from a mother or a father that didn't care anything about them and left them when they, do you see what I'm saying? I know how I felt. I remember the day I felt. My mother died. I know. I wept from Friday till Tuesday profusely, nonstop. And out at her home, I knelt down outside by the cellar and prayed to God for help and strength. I remember the day my dad died. I remember it well. I was on my way to Oklahoma City to a Baptist meeting, and he died. And I felt guilty for months and months and months. I remember how I felt when a sister died and all my family was there with her in Norman. Where was I? I was over in the fellowship hall trying to comfort another family with a funeral meal. And I felt guilty. I wasn't there. And then the day that I found out I had melanoma on my head, and a sister died the next day, and I couldn't go because I was dealing with my own trauma of what was happening in my own life, not knowing what the future held, what was going to take place. And I was so close to every one of those people. I remember sitting in medical center hospital that Sunday night when my grandmother said, oh, stay with me tonight, honey. And I said, but Grandma, I've got to go play the organ over at Emmanuel. But I'll see you after that. She died while I'm playing the organ. I wasn't there. I felt guilty. And at every one of those situations, I know how I felt. But when you lose somebody, I can only assume that I can identify with whatever loss it is, but I don't truly know how you feel because I don't know your relationships. I don't know who got mad at whom and left, and in the process of time, someone died, and then that person has to grieve the rest of their life and live with the guilt of, why did I do that day that caused the rift with this person or that person? So do y'all get the picture of why it's better to hug and say, I love you, I'm here and I care? That's as good as it gets. Not, I know how you feel, I've lost my spouse. Yes, you know how you felt about yours, but you cannot know the other person's feelings because you don't know all of the intricate things that have happened in relationships and through life and everything that's going on. I'm closing here. I want to get through verse 22. But she said to those women in Bethlehem, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. Verse 21 tells us she looks at these women in her city and she said, I went away full. In other words, I had my husband, I had my two sons. I went away full and the Lord has brought me back. Notice, empty. Do you see the incredible pain she's experiencing? And I'll tell you what a lot of Christians would do is they would scold Naomi for feeling the way she feels. And folks, that's just wrong. That's just absolutely wrong to do that. Why wouldn't she feel empty? Why wouldn't she feel like the Lord has brought me back empty? She said, why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me? Notice all those phrases in chapter 1 that she's speaking about how that the Almighty has dealt very tragically with her. When the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty, notice, has brought calamity upon me. I think that many times in studying the book of Ruth, we leave out all of these intricacies that are so vitally important in the narrative and the context of the emotions that this individual is going through. Verse 22, she says, so Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. God is going to work an incredible situation for Naomi, who's good, through a daughter-in-law by the name of Ruth, who will meet up with a guy by the name of Boaz, and had it not been for this, we wouldn't be singing, O Little Town of Bethlehem. And so, tonight, thank you for your great attention. I try to make this as interesting as I possibly can, and hopefully that it will speak volumes to our hearts in the days to come. God bless you for being here tonight.